Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as the new administration comes into office, this show will continue to be a place where people of goodwill with different politics and from different backgrounds are all welcome to talk, and we hope to listen to each other. We'll have a call-in later for anyone planning to attend the Women's March on Washington tomorrow or the one here in New York. Right now, on this inauguration day, we invite anyone who voted for Donald Trump to call in and tell us how you're feeling today and what your own hopes are for specific things that he'll accomplish in the next 4 years. For a guy who people say take him seriously but not literally, what do you want him literally to do? Trump voters, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. When President Obama was inaugurated 8 years ago, we did a call-in to create an Obama voters time capsule. We asked, what do you hope or what do you predict will be different 4 years from now? And people called in with things that they thought. I'll read a couple of these from 8 years ago. Shoki from Brooklyn wrote, what I hope he will change is the negative image we have abroad and will show that the U.S. foreign policy is not about cultural or economic imperialism, but about acceptance and change where humanity is concerned. Stuart from Hastings on Hudson wrote, in the largest public works program since the New Deal, this is a prediction, a national energy grid will be completed, allowing American business to harness and distribute from coast to coast the abundant wind energy of the Central Plains. And it went on with many others. So we had an Obama time capsule. We can start a Donald Trump time capsule for Trump voters, as that one 8 years ago was for Obama voters. If you voted for Donald Trump, call in with your specific hopes for the next 4 years. What, in all earnestness, do you want him to do? And in the case of Trump, his proposals have been kind of all over the place, right? He'll ban Muslims from entering our country. Now he says he won't, but maybe a ban on people from certain Muslim-majority countries that have a lot of terrorism. He'll have a deportation force aiming at everyone here illegally. Then he says, no, only the criminals here illegally, the bad dudes, as he put it. What do you want him to do? He's been for being neutral between Israelis and Palestinians or doubling down on support for Israel, including the settlements. He's been for withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords. Now he says he has an open mind. Waterboarding and other torture. Explicitly, he said torture because they'll talk more quickly. He used that word. Now he says maybe not after talking to General Mattis. He promised that Mexico will pay for the wall. And now he says the U.S. taxpayer will foot the bill for billions but get it back from Mexico later somehow. And I could go on. So if you voted for Trump because you took him seriously but not literally, as they say, now he's going to have to start talking literally, because laws and executive orders are literal. So if you voted for Trump, here we go. What do you want Trump literally to do? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And as your calls are coming in, WNYC's Matt Katz has been on a road trip from New York to Washington, talking to voters along the way. Hi, Matt.
Hi there, Brian.
Where are you right now?
We're on K Street, the famous lobbying strip in Washington, a few blocks from the mall where the inauguration is going down. There's a bunch of National Guard around and a few seems like tourists or inaugural goers, but otherwise it's kind of quiet on the out, a little bit beyond the mall in D.C. And it's a great day in D.C., and I mean that just literally, I promise.
And not just not just seriously. Let me play a clip of one of your Trump voters from Edison, New Jersey, named Dave Makar, if I'm pronouncing this right.
Bernie was a bad choice. Hillary was a bad choice. Out of the 16 candidates, none of them was promising. They were all talking politics and maintaining the level to be politically correct. Mr. Trump outshined out of them, and I made up my mind, I'm going to support him, and he's going to win. I used to tell people, and people used to laugh at me.
So tell me more about Dave McCarr. What does he want Trump to do, literally? He kind of said there in an impressionistic way why he voted for him.
Dave was interesting because he's a Republican Indian American. And we think of Indian Americans, particularly in New Jersey, as Democratic leaning, very highly educated, and that, you know, would indicate that he'd be Democratic leaning. But he's not. He is a Republican, and he believes that all groups need to fight for their rights, and that's what people have to do regardless of who's in the White House, and that Trump is not somebody who's going to trample on minority rights. Arun Venugopal, my colleague who's in the car with me right now, he's the one who actually interviewed Dave. And while he was in Edison with Dave, I was in Patterson, which has one of the largest Arab and Muslim populations in the country. And I was talking to people there about their concerns with Trump, which were evident. And I talked to a guy who was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and it was interesting to me because Bernie Sanders is Jewish, and after he told me, he was a Palestinian American, after he told me he was a Bernie Sanders supporter, he went off about how Jews control foreign policy in America, and he used terms that would seem possibly offensive to some Jews, and yet he supported the Jewish candidate. He also didn't think that the 9/11 happened the way the government said it did. So we've been struck repeatedly by the diversity of political opinions throughout our little road trip here, and how nobody really fits into a box. And people are making their decisions based on personality, based on personal experiences of their own, and then sometimes ideology. That's been pretty interesting to us.
Wait, did you say Arun Venugopal, who you did this reporting road trip from New York to Washington with, is sitting there in the car with you?
He's in the back seat. Would you like to speak with him?
In the back seat, yeah. Would you hand the phone back to Arun for a minute?
I will. I got shotgun today, but he's been pretty much hogging shotgun for most of the trip, just for the record. Hold on 1 second.
Matt, can you move your seat, man? I have no leg room here. Okay. Hey, is that Brian?
Yeah, Arun. How you doing? Matt, please move up your seat. Have a little respect for the people in the back of the car. So what's this? What have you been surprised about on this road trip, Arun?
Well, I mean, I too was surprised like Matt. Just like it's often very hard when you're speaking to certain people to fit them conveniently into the kinds of boxes that we as journalists you know, really like to put people into, because sometimes you want convenient, easy stories to tell. And a lot of people on the road that we've met don't have those stories to tell. You know, you have people also, I think they're living in these spaces where they're interacting with people who have, you know, different opinions and different political beliefs. And at least one person I was speaking to, she's a bartender in Maryland, and she's 19 years old. Her name is Caitlin. She comes from a very conservative community. She herself is very liberal. But her dad voted for Trump. Her best friends voted for Trump. And the way she speaks about them, you know, she speaks about them with quite a degree of respect. And, you know, she has to, the way she sees it, because she has to engage with them on a daily basis. And she has to live with them. But that said, you know, she said she is heading to the march tomorrow, the Women's March. So she kind of straddles these worlds. And I think it's a little complicated for her, but it's all she knows.
Another Trump voter you interviewed, Jenny Griffin from Graysonville, Maryland.
Because he's imperfect, okay, that makes him more likable to me. I don't need a Ken doll walking up there waving the right way, saying the right words and all that. There have been things that he has said that I've just like put my hands over my ears like, no, 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 no. You know, but in my daily life, there are times when I do that with myself. That's part of his charm to me, okay?
So Arun or Matt, whoever wants it, I mean, the horror that so many non-Trump voters feel is more profound than differences on policies. This isn't just vouchers versus neighborhood schools or Obamacare versus savings accounts. It's that he ran on bigotry and boasted about sexual assault and expressed admiration for authoritarian strongman. And I could go on with things like that. That's the don't normalize movement's genesis. Did you ask Jenny in Graysonville, Maryland, or anyone, how they can dismiss those things?
And Brian, this is Matt again, because I was the one who was talking to Jenny. I did. I brought up the fact that, you know, Trump had bragged about sexual assault. And she said, and everybody in the women in the office, there were three women in this office I was talking to in this at this oyster company, and they all jumped in at that point. And they said, all men talk like that. And I responded, well, I don't. And they dismissed that, and they said 99.9% of men talk like that. And I said, are the men downstairs shucking oysters talking like that? They said, yes. And even sometimes women talk like that. And they described all of these rough edges and offensive edges that so many of us see with what Trump says. They dismiss that as what everybody says in Washington and around the country. And the only difference is there have just been microphones and cameras in front of Trump so many times, and he's been captured. And he's been captured saying these things. And they said the fact that Trump says these things makes them like him more because he seems more real and he seems like he understands them because of these sort of rough edges, for lack of a better term.
All right. WNYC's Matt Katz and Arun Venugopal in the backseat today. Matt, move your seat up, okay? Give Arun some decent leg room. They've done there, as many of you have heard on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, they've been doing this road trip from New York to Washington in time for the inauguration, talking to voters along the way. Thanks for sharing.
Thanks, Brian. See you in New York.
And now to some of you, and again, our request for the next few minutes is specifically for people who voted for Donald Trump and what you really specifically, literally hope he's going to do once he's inaugurated today. And we'll start with Mark in Passaic County. Mark, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks. What are you hoping for? Get as specific and granular as you can.
Okay, I'm specifically looking for the repeal of the Health Care Act.
Repeal and replace with something that you would name?
The whole point of the Affordable Health Care Act was to help the middle class. I'm middle class myself. And where I lie in my income, I don't qualify for Obamacare, and I don't qualify for that, but I still don't have enough money to pay for health care. So I get slammed with a massive fine when I go to file my taxes at the end of the year.
Because you didn't buy an insurance policy. So
correct.
Are you just hoping that the fine goes away, or are you hoping that there's a subsidy that encompasses your income, or what would you really like?
I'd like affordable health care, like the act supposedly is named, but I've yet to see it. So I hope that Trump can pull through and actually come through on this promise and replace Obamacare with something that actually works.
Mark, thank you very much. Jim in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, I'd like for Trump to resolve. I voted in the primaries also. I would like for Trump to resolve two problems that could be symbiotically solved simultaneously. One, we have Mexicans who are illegal who are afraid to go back to Mexico because of many reasons, economic, and because mass graves are found near the border with people with their hearts cut out by the cartels, etc. And it's terrible. Now, we have also the highest unemployment rate in the center cities of America. And one of the great ironies is that the Black Lives, et cetera, are for the illegal immigration. So there are four people taking their own jobs while they get entitlement. So what I think is that there should be a very great organization of cooperation between the United States and Mexico to eliminate these problems. After all, Mexico is a wealthy country. They have the Pemex oil company, which is one of the biggest in the world.
Well, they have that oil company. I don't think anybody would characterize Mexico as a wealthy country. But how? So it sounds like what you want is for Trump to work with Mexico to create conditions where a lot of recent Mexican immigrants would decide on their own to go home. Am I hearing you right?
Well, basically, yes. Or even if they didn't decide, it would be a soft landing. And also, I want to say one thing very quickly, parenthetically, with regard to when the mayor was on, very fast, one sentence. if he takes away the details of the NYC ID identification program, if he erases all of that information, that will make the ID worthless. So it doesn't really matter if he does that, because he'll even defeat his own purpose.
Jim, thank you very much. Damien in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Damien.
Yeah, hello. Good morning. I'm calling because I'm a Democrat. I supported Obama in both elections, voted for him in the primary, voted for Sanders in this primary, and voted for Trump. And what I hope he does is change our party's discourse. 15 years ago, I feel like what the Republicans were doing in the aftermath of 9/11 was saying, you know, anybody who questions hawkishness as a response to 9/11 is unpatriotic, and they silenced their own discourse in that way, and it was dangerous. And I feel like we're leaning dangerously close to that. You know, if I hear on WNYC all the time about the angry, uneducated white voters who supported Trump, but there would be no such discussion about, like, angry black voters. I mean, thankfully, there'd be no, like, racist comments about angry black voters. And I feel like, you know, our discourse has gotten to the point where it's shifted. It's crossed the line somewhere where at this point, if you know, you're not allowed to say something like, you know, you're not allowed to have a serious discussion about why are so many terrorist acts being perpetrated by at least, let's say, self-described Muslims, because I know a lot of Muslims say that's not us, that's not Islam. But, you know, in order to even have these discussions, we have to be able to have these discussions.
So how does the election of Donald Trump further those discussions that you would want to have? Because he seems to stand in opposition.
Instead of a president who's willing to say these things.
Say that again.
We'll have a president who's willing to say these things. I mean, the conversation is already in the last 6 months. Gotten to a point where it never would have gotten if we had continued with the status quo, I believe.
I see, because he's so explicit on the other side, it's going to force Democrats, you're saying, to be explicit on their side.
Yeah, I mean, listen, more specifically, I'd like to see him, you know, get back to his, like, hanging out with the Rainbow Coalition in the 80s, liberal Democrat New Yorker roots, and do lots of great stuff like that. I'd like to see him, you know, go after Big Pharma like he seems to be doing, you know, do stuff like throw the Koch brothers off his golf course like I sort of thought I read about him doing recently. I mean, I'd like to, you know, be pleasantly surprised. I'm appalled. I can't dismiss all the awful stuff he did. But, you know, Hillary Clinton, admires, oh, geez, his name escapes me. I don't know
who you mean. And I don't want to, I'm going to move on because I don't want to relitigate the campaign, but rather keep it specifically on what you hope Donald Trump will do. But I hear you. Thank you very much. We'd have to fact check whether he kicked the Koch brothers off his golf course. I hadn't, or one of his golf courses. I hadn't heard that one, but we will check it. Tanya in Toms River, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, good morning, Brian.
So you voted for Trump, right?
I did. Actually, I grew up in New York. I was a lifelong Democrat. I've lived in New Jersey almost 20 years now. And with the election of Barack Obama in 08, I actually started becoming more conservative, reading more, listening more. And, I actually was a Cruz supporter in the primary, so I'm really more leaning towards a constitutionalist conservative. Mm-hmm. But, yes, I did vote for Donald Trump.
And so what very specifically do you hope he'll do?
Actually, it is my desire that, elections in this country, presidential elections, we seem to go back between both each party every few years. We never stay consistently Democrat president or Republican president. So this is a normal thing to have had 8 years of a Democrat president and now starting a new, you know, term of a Republican president. So it's my desire that, you know, he was, like the other caller said, he was a lifelong Democrat himself, a New York City liberal Democrat, and more recently evolved to be a Republican in whatever ways he has decided. So my desire is that that voice, that liberal Democrat New York City Republican, that voice can be heard by the people who are so viciously opposed to him right now.
But to do what? But
that's a campaign. Of Donald Trump is right. What has drawn Republicans and others to him.
I'm asking you to get past that, which is really a campaign argument, to vote for him, and asking you what specifically, especially for somebody who's articulated various positions on various sides of issues and emphasized different things at different times, what do you want him to do? What do you really want him to do? What should be thing one, thing two, thing three?
Oh, I want him to keep all of his promises, for sure. But with respect to the divisiveness, we can't continue. A house divided will not stand. We cannot continue with the level of anger and the level of angry, vicious discourse and the disrespect towards each other. The conversations now are not between people who are reasonable and good on either side. It's now you're a misogynist, you must be racist. And one of your expert guests made kind of a vague reference to a person being educated, which would lean liberal. Excuse me. That type of thing has to stop. We have to just stop with the anger, and we have to calm it down and learn to talk to each other.
But
so it's my desire, my hope, that somehow, even with the Republican or the conservative positions that he has, that liberals will find something that they can come to the middle with.
That's my desire, too, that everybody be able to talk to each other and listen to each other across political lines, ideological lines, and not just demonize each other. Now, what's the most important thing that Donald Trump could do at a policy level that would satisfy the reasons you voted for him?
Economics. I think he has to, like another caller said, I also fall into that category where I make too much money to get Obamacare, but I don't make enough reasonably to afford health care for myself. So economics, I would like to see the job market go back to being robust. I would like our college-educated kids coming out of school not to have to work in Starbucks, but rather as a choice, not that anything's wrong working in Starbucks, but that they can pursue the careers that they want. You know, when I was coming out of school, out of high school, I could get a job, you know, as a secretary making $25,000, $30,000 and live a pretty decent life. You can't do that anymore. So economics is what I would like to see him focus on the most.
Let me ask you one more thing, since you brought up how divided everybody is. When Obama's inauguration day came, he had an 80% approval rating for how he handled the transition. Today, Trump has only half that, about 40%. On how he's handled the transition. There must be some people listening right now who even have buyer's remorse based on that, because that's a lower percentage of lower percentage than the vote that he actually got. Are you dismayed that Trump himself is contributing to the division? Because you know people on the other side see him as very much a divider, not a uniter.
Well, the thing is, either the same thing could be said for Barack Obama, because there were comments made during his years that were very divisive towards people who didn't vote for him. He started out, actually, his presidency saying elections have consequences. That's what he told Republicans, meaning your opinion doesn't count. So I don't really put too much onto that, but I will say with respect to polls, I have completely stopped having any faith in polling. It is so subjective. It's dependent on who's doing the poll, how many people are polled, what percentage of the people polled lean one way or the other.
All true. So tell me about your impression of how Trump has handled the transition, and do you think he's been acting as a unifier?
I think he has come in like any other president has. He has things he wants to get done, like any other president from either party has done. He has people he's want to put in office, put in his cabinet, like any other president has done. And the truth of the matter is, he is going to lead the way he said he's going to lead. And the people of this country, however you look at the Electoral College, they voted for him, just as in 2008. There are as many people who did not want Barack Obama in office because of what his policies were, but he was elected by the people. So the same, even though people were upset and unhappy about Obama over the last 8 years, we had to live with it. So you know what? You have to live with it. And I don't have a problem with protests. I don't have a problem with organizing. But you have to understand that when Democrats are in office, Democrat things are going to get done. And when Republicans are in office, Republican things, quote unquote, are going to get done.
Tanya, thank you. Keep calling
us. Thank you so much for your time.
And clarification on kicking the Koch brothers off one of his golf courses. I don't know that this completely clarifies it, but this is from a Politico story on December 31st. President-elect Donald Trump ejected from his West Palm Beach golf course one of his most critical biographers, Harry Hurt III, who had been preparing to play in a foursome with billionaire mega donor David Koch. Koch didn't contribute to the Koch campaign per se. He's a Republican mega donor in general, not to Koch, not to Trump. But there you go. So maybe in effect he also kicked Koch off if he was going to play with Harry Hurt, and they led Hurt off. Okay, for whatever that's worth. Rutherford in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rutherford.
Hi, good morning.
Voted for Trump. What do you hope he'll do?
I did. Yes. Well, firstly, I hope that he will establish a good relationship with Russia, because I don't see what benefit we derive from an adversarial relationship with Russia. The only people I think would benefit from that are the people within, intricately involved in the military-industrial complex. Beyond that, there's nothing to gain. That's one. Two, I would like for Mr. Trump to respect the way Israel was established, and Israel was established partially on the basis of Jerusalem being neutral, if we go back and study that history. So for them not to talk about moving embassy to Jerusalem, it is totally wrong. We've got to recognize what Israel is.
So there's one bit of his foreign policy that you like, it sounds like, closer relations with Russia, and one that you don't like, his promise to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem.
Yes.
Rutherford, thank you very much. Graham in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Graham.
Hi. I'm sorry I snuck in because I did not vote for Donald.
Oh, then, nope. You don't qualify for this segment. I apologize. Call another day. Maria in Forked River, you're on WNYC. Maria, did you vote for Donald Trump?
I absolutely did. thank you for taking my call.
And what do you hope he does?
Well, I hope he lives up to everything he's the other side is against what he says. I agree with Tanya in Tom's River. Wow, a lot of good points that she made. And mostly two points. Economics, yes, and the insurance, medical. I have my mom and my stepdad who, unfortunately, he doesn't qualify for it. He has a small dying business. He recently broke his ankle, and, you know, he can't even get medical care for that because he can't afford it.
So do you want Trump? That's so interesting, and this is related to the earlier caller. Like you say, he seemed to tell a similar story. Are you hoping that who qualifies for subsidies gets expanded under Trump?
I just hope that the people who are making too much money to afford the Obamacare or whatever, however Donald's going to do, if he's going to change it, expand it, whatever he's going to do, I just hope it will be fair across the board for everyone. I think everyone is entitled, and it's not an entitlement thing, but I think everyone's entitled to having coverage and, you know, care, medical care. I mean, we all need it. Who's to say who should get it and who shouldn't? I don't think anyone should feel they have the right to say who's, you know?
Because what the Obama supporters say is that, you know, he made as earnest as possible an effort to expand health insurance to as many people as possible, and it's the Republicans who've always been opposed to that, letting the market rule instead.
I don't know. I'd have to dig deeper on that one, but I talk to so many people, and there's very few people I know who have it, but the only people that I know who do have it, they have to travel miles to see a doctor. It's not a doctor of their choice, whether they like them or not. And then the co-pays are astronomical. They can't even afford to pay the co-pays. So what is an Affordable Care Act? I just hope that Donald does bring something in that is affordable for everyone, that is fair across the board. And as going on to the economics, I'm looking forward to jobs being expanded and open doors, opportunities. I had so many opportunities. Every time a door opened, I knocked, I became a computer engineer without a college degree. because I was ambitious, for one, but there was that opportunity, and I don't think that there's too many opportunities for people these
We just have 30 seconds left, but any one policy that you think would lead to more economic opportunity, more good jobs?
Oh, any one policy. Growing small business, the middle guys. You know, I'm a middle guy, my husband and I, and we're not looking to be, you know, the next
And what would do that? What would do that? What could the government do that would grow the small businesses?
Not have us pay so much money in our, let's see, what is it that we pay? We pay $33,000 a year in liability.
Uh-huh.
Insurances are so high for us that we can't afford to hire guys. We're working mostly just to pay a lot of the taxes for our small business to keep it open.
And Maria, that's going to be the last word. Thank you very much for calling. The last word in this segment.